Yes, hello, come on in, sit down, and buckle up, because I'm in a horrible mood because of this stupid baseball team, and I feel stupid for... This is what happens. I feel stupid for watching so much of the games this summer of my life, of everything. I'll only be this young once, Jake. I'll never be younger than this, and I spent 2023... watching this fucking team that at the very end when it was like, okay, I was clean slate. I went, okay, 10-5 over the 15 game stretch we talked about last time we talked. That's enough. They did enough. They were limping into this series against the Texas Rangers with the playoff spot. That's enough. They got me into meaningful September baseball, and they came out, and this is the worst series I can ever remember. I can't remember a four-game series worse than this. Certainly not recently. I'm blown away by their failure to show up here. I was begging this team to give me the reason to give them a benefit of the doubt, to say, listen, long year, ups and downs, shit's happened, it's been bad, it's been good, they have great pitching, they have great defense, all it is timely hitting. Timely hitting can happen at any time, come out here and really compete, and they've been... the worst four games that they've played. 10-0 yesterday. We've turned the microphones on. 8-2, 9-2. I don't even know today. I have quit on today's game. Absolutely incredible, incredible cap to put on this year from this 2023 Toronto Blue Jays team. That's where I am. I needed to get it all out before I pass it to you, Jake. Go ahead. Say whatever the fuck you want. I could be here all night bitching about these fucking idiots.
I think it's pretty clear through every show we've done, our tweets, that we're a pro-labor podcast for baseball. That being said, I'm ready to advocate for people to lose their jobs. Was my long lead up to that joke. It's a fucking disaster. Like, I don't know how else... you could possibly call it. Every single facet of it is... the last four games went literally as bad as they could. Every problem that has been... yeah, I feel like it's sort of, in a lot of ways, it's kind of similar to how last season ended in the comeback by Seattle, mm-hmm. where it was like all of the problems that had been bubbling under the surface all year... except for Teoscar Hernandez, came sort of home to roost, and all of the problems throughout the year cost them that game. And then the last 4 days has been pretty much the same. The pitching fell apart when it shouldn't have. Finally, after all year of propping this team up.
Yeah.
All year propping this team up.
The incredible bullpen. Trevor Richards has done it. They've done it. They've unlocked him. He's given up a run in 11 straight appearances down the stretch.
Everything came home to roost. Obviously, we'll get to Vlad. Bo is probably still hurt. Didn't get a hit till tonight.
Bo's still hurt. Yeah.
Didn't get a hit this series till tonight. The kids have been decent. The Sheen on Schneider's kind of worn off a little bit, but that's to be expected of a rookie and of how he was hitting. He's still one of the more productive hitters on the team regardless. Clement's been fine.
He's going to end up being top three in Fangraphs war. He's lapped Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's already worth two more wins than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You talk about like, geez, David Schneider could strike out the rest of the way, and he would be top five player on the team this year.
Without exaggeration.
Oh, my God.
Without exaggeration, the season was done once Danny Jansen got hurt. In a lot of ways.
Evidently.
Look, there's going to be a lot of hot takes tonight on this show. We're going to say a lot of things. I have several hot takes to dish out over the course of however long this conversation is. My first one is the most immediate, because it applies to this second. I would argue that this is the, right now as we sit here, this is the lowest point in the Blue Jays franchise in like 7 years. And if you want to extend that,
yeah,
because if you want to extend it because 15 and 16 were at least like moderate successes, you know, they made the ALCS, so you can't call it, they didn't win, but you know what I mean. If you want to extend that to 2014, mm-hmm. I think that's fair. This is
so, yeah, I guess you're saying the last 10 years, right? Is sort of your, yeah, that's the bold one, because 10 years you bring in the 2013 team, and my only team that I would put up on this in terms of low point, 2018, when everybody from the 2015 team left on bad terms in like the span of 12 months.
Yes,
that was pretty bad too.
Yes, but we also knew that team was going to be bad. There was like that.
I know, but it wasn't so much. It wasn't so much the team, but it was like Donaldson left on really bad terms. Stroman left on really bad terms. Eddie thing was weird, and then Batista like didn't retire, but they didn't give him, like, you know,
yeah,
what I mean? Like, it wasn't so much the team was bad. It was like it really felt like
the vibe.
You know, Stroman and Sanchez hated each other. Like there was everything. It was very clear we were watching it tear down, and we didn't even have the Vladdy and Bo to be like, at least we have this future. But yeah, I'm your point is made. I had said that they were the least liked team that I can remember since 2012, the team that spurred all the moves. But I don't know. That was before this series, and now this series is over. And I'm like, boy, they got booed awfully loud. Like, I've heard the team, nobody care about the team. I don't know the last time I've heard them get booed that loudly back-to-back games. That's... to me, an indicative sign. This is approaching all-timer territory for me.
So when I was there last night on Wednesday, and I chose to go. I chose to go to the game over going to a concert I wanted to go to, which was a bad call.
The classic Jake conundrum. You're
classic.
Presented with that 10 times.
But you know,
a year.
I bought the tickets on the weekend. It felt exciting. It was, and then I was shocked. You know, I'm going to get out of the way right now. We're not going to talk about attendance because this week is always down. It's fun to joke about, but this week always averages like 24,000 because school and everything.
I mean, yeah. I'll say this about like attendance. I think the Texas Rangers should be worried about their ability to draw on the road, you know?
Yeah, they're in a playoff race too. Let's not forget that.
Right?
But
nobody's
no,
coming to see the Rangers. What's wrong with your franchise?
What I will say about the crowd, however, not related to attendance at all, is, and I have, this is not a criticism because this is, I think, deserved. Even despite there being 20 something people there last night, it was just like lifeless from minute one. And usually I'd be like, you gotta support your team and it's a playoff big game and you gotta blah, blah, blah. But like, they haven't shown us anything for, let alone the first 2 days of the series, but against any team that's not a basement dweller in weeks.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting before the boos started, because it really felt like the crowd and the team, and this is kind of my point and a segue into what I'm sort of getting into, just like out of gas, defeated, don't give a shit. Like, there was no, just as there's been no vibes around the team all year, except bad ones, there was no vibes in the building last night. And that was before the anger and the booing.
Yeah, before the two... To be clear, the 10-0 loss.
Yeah,
to fall out of a playoff spot. raucous.
The first game I have left before the game was over in years last night.
How could you not? How could you not? Yeah, I mean, there's been the bubbling under war, I think, all year long within the fan base and even sometimes within ourselves. I think you have this war of like, you know, we want to be patient and wanting to see the big picture and like sort of agreeing with a lot of the principles of what was happening and being like, no need to freak out. There's still in a playoff spot. No need to freak out. There's this and that. But I think What has been crystallized in this series and the fact that the Manoah stuff is coming out at the same time, and I think ties into the environment that you're talking about yesterday, and obviously tonight, is something stinks here. Something like, you know what, we've sensed it all year long, and you keep getting told, like, it's a long season, you watch a lot of baseball, and you're like, yes, it is, and I have. But something stinks. Something is... we're going to find out what it is maybe in the offseason, and maybe we won't ever get a full story on it, but something has stunk around this team for quite some time, and little by little the stories are coming out, and this series was like the culmination almost of being like, we told, like, there's, I think both sides on how the team felt this year sort of were waiting to have their we told you moment, right? The team finally hits the runners in scoring position, and people were like, we told you those numbers weren't sustainable. And this is a little bit like some of us that were like being driven insane by that to be like, actually, no, actually, they fucking wilt when it matters. Like, clearly, because they didn't show up at all in the last four games. Nobody. And the pitching, has, which was so great all year long, has been pretty much dog shit in this series. But also to the point where it's like, well, the offense is doing nothing. Your guys are hurt, and the guys that we thought would get hurt, and the lack of depth is exposed, and it's like by the way, this is exactly what we would worry would happen with the way that we were talking about this team's makeup all year long, and they are the biggest group of like paper tiger front runner, believe that they are. I think the team believed the same as everyone was always telling, they're so talented that it's just going to click and happen. Well, maybe it won't. Maybe they're not. Maybe it's almost over and there's like 16 games left. They still have a chance to crawl in. People love to remind you, but I'm at the crawl in and what? I have no reason to believe they're about to step in and take on any good team and play well, play disciplined baseball against the Rays and win in the Trop. I hope they do it, and I'm thrilled if I get to eat my crow on this, but I see no reason to believe that's about to happen. It makes me feel insane.
I think you, you've segued nicely into my second hot take of the day, which is around the something being rotten at the core of this team. And this is going to be a comparison that will probably come back to bite me, and because it's just how it goes. But my beautiful Tottenham Hotspur are off to a great start for the first time in a long time. And they look great, and they look like they're having fun, and they're playing really fun soccer, and it's a joy to watch. And this comes with the removal, you know, a new coach, obviously, but it also comes along with the removal of the old guard leadership group of players. Your Harry Kanes, your Hugo Lloris, Eric Dier, all great players, you know, legends, no question. But you look at the way the team is behaving with each other, the bond that there seems to be on and off the field. There's a joy to them right now. There's vibes to them right now for sure. And you know, it's early days, and I'm sure it'll go the other way, as sports do. But you can't help but look at it and be like, oh, maybe those guys were the problem. And, you know, you look at the Jays and they wilted last year, as you said, and they've clearly wilted this year. And it just, you know, I'll preface this by saying it's really hard to talk about this without sounding like the worst kind of sports fan. Just like angry calling radio
before you,
guy.
Yeah.
But
before you go on, I do want to address that too. Because listen, it's very frustrating to be a fan of this team, and it's very frustrating to always hear, well, it's just luck, right? Because also admitting that it is luck and timing is like the whole thing. But also you end up when you're at this point of the season, we end up with no other choice but then to start like armchair psychologizing. Because it's like,
yeah.
What other recourse? Something is going on, obviously. Like, it's not nothing. That makes no sense. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, it's one of those things that over time evens out. It's like, well, it's been a shitload of time. We're talking about every important game for the last two. Like,
yeah, no, 100%.
Anyway,
and I think
go on.
My point is more that it's hard to look at the team this week, this year, end of last year, and not be like, you know, maybe this the leadership group on this team is rotten. Maybe there is something deeper going on here that isn't like. I'm pointing the finger mostly at like Vlad and Springer, I guess, because I'm not sure who else you can really put in that group on this team. Like, I don't think Bo is that kind of guy.
He's playing hurt, showing up, trying to do it. Like,
totally.
You know,
It just seems like, and like Springer seems to give a shit from a like frustration standpoint, and Vlad, I don't know, man. It just feels like there was a lot of talk at the end of last season about attitudes, and some was fair, some wasn't. I'm thinking especially about the stories coming out after they blew the wild card game with Vlad pushing Teoscar to take the curtain call in the fourth inning, or some of the guys some of the guys smiling in the dressing room after that game. And, you know, again, some of that is valid. Some of that is stupid baseball nonsense. But, you know, you look at this year and it's like, maybe the core leadership side of this group isn't, it just like, they don't have it to be those guys. Because you need those guys. Like, you can say all you want about the 2015 team being a bunch of dickheads, but they had those guys. You knew that in the big moments. Well, yeah. You know that in the big moments, the big dickheads were going to whip the team into shape when they needed to and show up and deliver when they needed to. And I think that if we're talking leadership group, you know, the two big wilts for this core has been under John Schneider. And, you know, I think we've sort of, you and I, we have been reluctant to place a ton of blame on Schneider this season because, you know, the manager only gets you so far. But the last couple weeks, he's been bad on the field with his decision making.
Yeah.
Really bad. Some really insane managerial decisions. Even to tonight, you know, pinch hitting Espinal tonight, or throwing Richards in the top eight when, as you said, he's given up a run in 10 straight appearances. And he's been so bad in the last couple weeks. And also off the field, it seems clear that he's just not a guy who can get through to these guys. Like, evidently, because whatever he's doing ain't working. And it makes me wonder if maybe Charlie actually knew what he was doing the whole time. I'm not saying Charlie was the guy to get them to a World Series, but, you know, clearly Schneider isn't.
There's this funny counter to the idea that, like, you know, they sure do seem miserable. I would say they seem like the most miserable group I've ever seen. And the counter, of course, is like, well, everybody's having fun when they're winning. And I was like, did they? This team won a lot of games this year.
So I was gonna say, did they ever seem like?
When were they having a lot of fun? I don't remember them really having like David.
Maybe
Schneider's
trading your
debut
best
was fun.
Maybe trading maybe trading your superstars two best friends isn't a good strategy to build vibes. I don't know.
Well, but also like Vlad's a fucking adult here. Like, you're an adult baseball player.
Yeah.
If it's like we traded away his buddies and now he's not good enough to be a half win player. It's like, well, okay, well, that's, you're a major league baseball player. Not a lot of guys don't have their two best friends on the team. It's like,
that's true.
It's like, yeah, but it's a pretty big yeah, but for me, you sulk in the off season. We're getting paid, and you're supposed to be anyway. Yeah, the Schneider thing. It's all sort of the same conversation for me. Schneider is the same as the Atkins, which is the same as a major shakeup trade thing, where it's like, is the whole problem Schneider? No. Is the whole problem Atkins? No. But something is fucking wrong here. Something is, guys are quitting on the team. Alec Manoah was quit on the team. He was like, well, fuck you guys, and was not a part of this. Something is up. Somebody is fucking up somewhere here. I don't know who, But somewhere along the line, somebody's fucked this up pretty bad because
I think lifeless
doesn't seem like it's been good in any stretch anywhere.
I think the Manoah thing is a good illustration of it. He's a guy who quit on the team because he was mad that he wasn't getting treated well for playing like shit, I guess.
I see that he sees last year. You see last year, Barrios got a chance to work through it, right? Barrios got a chance to work through being terrible. And I see his point to that. And my only thing on the Manoah is we haven't heard a leak from his side yet, but I do understand that viewpoint, no question. We're trying to win baseball games. You got to get sent down. You can't be like, oh, yeah, it's personal. I should be allowed to stay up. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but he's not owed anything. But I think that I'm going to make a big assumption here. And it's an assumption based on reality, but admittedly, as you said, armchair psychologists, we don't have document proof of this. But I think I have a pretty good idea. Ross Atkins is a lot of things as a general manager. Some are good, some are bad. A lot is bad, but some is good. He's done a half-decent job, I would say. One thing that Ross Atkins is empirically terrible at is being a human and, talking about human issues and emotions and players in any way that sounds like a guy who actually understands. He sounds like a robot at all times, is kind of my point. And we've seen this kind of in a funny way when he talks about trades, and we've seen it in a very not funny way in the way he dealt with the Anthony Bass situation. But, you look at the, for lack of a better term, lack of heart from the team this year. You look at the Manoah situation this year, and it makes me wonder if this team culture that they've tried so hard to build, that the idea of taking away the fun and being serious red asses who just win baseball games and show up and do their work and whatever, obviously, very obviously, it sapped the joy from the team completely. But I also wonder if it sapped sort of the human side of the baseball team, where because everything is data and everything is business and it's not flashy and it's not fun going into this year, not that that's to blame for everything, because it's obviously not. But it does make me wonder if, the heart of what's rotten in the team psychologically starts at the top. Basically, this is all to say that they should fire Atkins and Schneider.
It's so hard to parse because, I feel so many different ways about it. I feel like, man, it's hard for me to even pick apart the any of the on paper stuff, right? As you said, I think moves made and the performance of the guys they've called up has only firmed this up for me. I was like, damn, did a pretty damn good job putting together a great pitching staff for the most part. The mix of guys that they developed versus veterans that they brought in seems like it should work. And it's even for the vibes conversation, doesn't seem like Brandon Belt is a bad dude to be around. He seems like a funny guy that everyone's keeps it light in a funny way. Varsho doesn't strike me as a real red ass kind of guy. It's the rest of them are Buffalo kids. It's you're really talking almost entirely about Whit Merrifield here, right? Because Kevin Kiermaier doesn't really seem like a hard ass. So I do see they're not Vladdy's friends is the difference, of course.
For sure, yeah.
I keep going back to it. It's man, if the guy has to only have his friends around, otherwise he's fucking a half win player. What are we doing? What are we doing?
I don't think it's just Vlad though. The whole year has been so joyless. Sure. You're right.
Well, Springer's the dirty secret is Springer's too old, right? We can do the Springer this and that. It's it's his 100%. He's declining.
He's been hurt for his worst years. But yeah, like
his worst OPS in ever, technically 40 below his low point, which is in 2018. Wait, listen, he's getting old. He's played a lot of center field, played a lot of outfield, run around a lot, played a ton this year. Next year is going to be his age 34 season. It's the Vlad that's the unexplainable one.
It might again, not be unexplainable. I don't think, but that, Vlad. So here's the thing with Vlad. I don't think it's unexplainable. Both Joe Siddle and Buck Martinez have done pretty thorough breakdowns in the last 10 days about what is different about Vladdy's swing mechanics. And all I'm saying is if those two guys are identifying it, it's been identified in the clubhouse. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I know that Guillermo Martinez is the punching bag du jour for the fan base. And I get that to an extent. But like, he's seen it. If fucking Buck Martinez is commenting on it, the literal hitting coach of the team knows that. Which says to me...
And don't forget Dave Hudgens. I mean, that guy is not afraid to ask questions about anything. That guy...
Well, I mean, Dave Hudgens probably thinks it's not working for different reasons with Vladdy, but if it's this obvious to outside observers what he's doing differently to make him produce worse, it's being talked about on the field and in practice and in BP and all that, which stands to reason maybe Vlad's just not fucking listening. Maybe he's a guy.
It seems like
I was having a discussion today about Jose Bautista, who had terrible swing mechanics before he broke out. And then Vernon Wells gave him advice and helped him adjust his mechanics, adjust his hand placement, adjust where his elbows were so they're not in so much. And then he became Jose Bautista. And obviously Vlad was at a... I would say Vlad had more success in his brief career than Bautista did pre-adjustments. You know, he's an MVP finalist 2 years ago.
I would say journeyman never played anywhere versus
yeah. So, but I wonder if there's an
if second that's, best player in the league at 21. Yeah,
but like to be told your mechanics aren't working and here's what you should do, you have to be willing to listen. You have to be willing to hear that and go, yeah, I should make some adjustments. And this is now 2 years of Vlad not being great. We're past this is a fluke. He's been bad for longer than he was good. So I don't know what I've not learned enough in swing mechanics to know what causes that change. But like, clearly everyone can see what the issues are. And if he's not correcting them, you know, unless Guillermo Martinez is like the worst hitting coach in the history of baseball, then the problem can only land on Vlad.
Really bad. I mean, yeah, it's hard to know. There's quotes here and there. There was a quote from Gosman praising the Orioles and Red Sox young players. Said that I know those are guys that love to look into data and they love to study and they love to make adjustments and they love to listen to hitting coaches. Maybe that's our problem, sort of what he said. It's an offhanded thing. And Snyder had sort of made passing comment about it. It's hard to know, obviously, without knowing. But it's, again, this is another one where you're sort of casting the idea of what might be happening onto the team because of what's happening. It's certainly, if you want to think of a way it could be happening, it's pretty easy to cast Vlad as like, this guy has naturally talented his way out of every other problem he's ever had in baseball. Yeah. No problem.
100%.
Elite swing speed. So it doesn't really matter that he misses here.
Hits
or there.
The ball into the ground harder than anybody.
So, you know, he's been able to... Yeah, exactly right. Hits the ball harder than anybody. All he has to do is raise it up and he'll be unstoppable. Well, he's actually not done that in the last month. He's been bad in a lot of different ways. Not getting on base. And you can see, you know, he's a guy that you can see when he's having frustrated at-bats because he's not even... He's an angry kid playing the show, right? Just like pressing square the moment the pitch gets thrown and it's a slider down and away and it's not even close.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow. anybody could do this against you right now. He gets into that, which was like supposed to be that, and that, like, totally abandoning what was supposed to be the first skill was like he absolutely only waits for his pitch and does it and like does huge damage, and now he's not patient and he's swinging out of his shoes and he's not doing anything. A big home run tonight in the first thing, that's great. Absolutely positively knew he was coming up short in the seventh when the game was still within reach. This keeps happening, Jake. No matter what we're talking about, it keeps coming back to being like, but if Vladdy was fucking good, it would literally none of this shit would matter.
But I think with Vlad,
the truth of it is, I can't imagine giving Vlad the big contract at the end of this. When it's free agency in 2026, I'm gonna have to say no thanks. I'm gonna have to say
absolutely. Like, it's not
a mega deal. That's for sure.
It's very easy, and I think correct to cast a lot of the blame for culture, attitude, whatever you want to call it, and put a lot of that on Atkins and Schneider. And I think that's fair. But I also think at the end of the day, Vlad is supposed to be the guy. Capital T, capital G, the guy. Center of all the marketing, captain of the team, top, like, number one in your playbooks, all that garbage. And at the end of the day, he's just maybe not. And like you said, a lot of this, all of this goes away if Vlad is even 75% as good as he was in 2021. All of this goes away. They're a 100-win team probably if he does that. But he hasn't shown up again. And his, you know, I don't want to say his attitude sucks, but like, clearly there's something going on there that isn't just swing mechanics.
I'm glad you say that. And his defense is cratered. His base running is cratered. You want to talk about effort stuff? You want to talk about things that aren't hitting?
And, you know, things I think,
are cratered. He's been and horrible. He's been the best, worst defensive infielder in the league.
I also think I sort of avoided this last year because I didn't fully believe it, but I saw rumblings of it, heard rumblings of it, and was kind of like, nah. And then when the culture shift happened this year, I was like, okay. It really does feel like for the last few years, Vlad and Bo as well, but Bo seems to have responded, have been treated with a lot of kid gloves by the franchise. And I think sort of Vlad's effort stuff this year is really that coming to a head. You know, when he didn't run out of the box last week, you know, Schneider's quote is, it's fine. And I this isn't just about John Schneider, but, you know, if you don't push the guy to, after the collapse last year, it wasn't, man, that was a massive fucking failure. That was an absolute pants shitting of the highest order. It's just, I don't know. I just feel like, Vlad has been treated his entire life, which some of that's completely fair, as like the guy, and treated like Vlad can do no
best,
wrong.
Best prospect anybody's ever seen. First ever 80 hit tool, 80 power tool.
And then the last 2 years, he's been shitty. And it's still, there's no problem with him not running out of the box. And I know that's so fucking like annoying baseball fan, but at a certain point, clearly this team just doesn't have it. Like, someone, there's got to be a blame for that somewhere. Like, I don't know.
It's all I'll list for you the players who've appeared in at least 20 games for the Blue Jays and have less F war offensively than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It's Nathan Lucas.
Yep.
Paul DeYoung. Nathan Lucas and Santiago Espinal, and that's it. Those are the two guys. Mason McCoy didn't play enough games. Paul DeYoung didn't play enough games. That's it. Just Lucas, basically. He's behind Ernie Clement. He's behind Biggio and Kirk and everybody on the team. Everybody's a single player on the team. It's pretty amazing.
You know what the most frustrating thing of all of this is? If they get in, which at this point, I have my doubts. If they get in, it still wouldn't shock me if they just like figured it out.
I mean, it would shock me, but it's not the craziest script ever, right?
It's not the craziest thing to ever happen. I guess that's fair.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you on that. And that's the most annoying part, I think, is there's no reason to believe they would. There's not a version of this where they absolutely trounce Texas over four games. But this just feels like it writ large that even if they do get in, you're like, well, we'll see. But again, by the end of that sentence, Jake, I can be like, okay, but who are we really scared of in the AL, right?
Right,
who are
really exactly. Scared of?
The Orioles, I guess.
Even Atlanta, they're 6-0 against this year.
Right. So it's like if Atlanta is the only team you're thinking of, now you're talking about they're making the World Series because it's like Houston. It's like, man, the NL West is garbage. Right. We're as right. good as these. It's literally Orioles and the Rays, and you're like, well, the Rays. Both of those teams, they're just like parts are flying off them as they reach the finish line, right?
Right. This is what's so annoying.
It's actually what makes it more annoying, and absolutely. Not what makes it.
What's even more annoying about it?
You should calm down because it's actually way worse.
What's even more annoying about it is that I have more faith of them making a playoff run than I do in them actually making the playoffs.
Right. I think I agree. I think that's a great way to put it.
Like you can say all you want, like, yeah. Oh, Texas and Seattle play each other a bunch down the stretch. And they do. But the Jays also have to play baseball games down the stretch, which is a shame. It'd be great if they could just freeze the season now. This. Freeze the season now and let Texas and Seattle play each other. Although they still don't get in. But yeah.
So they play Boston for three coming up at home. Boston, a team that has just fired their general manager, sort of young guys with nothing to lose playing in this series, right? Boston has nothing to lose coming into this weekend. It's a trillion to one long shot for them anyway, but they have a bunch of young guys and it would be funny for them to play really well. They got nothing to lose, no big deal. You got New York in shambles. Hopefully you have your six against New York. But the six against Tampa Bay, I think we are we've got caught here looking at the wild card standings and going, well, Tampa Bay's way up. So they're cruising. They're putting it into cruise. No. Tampa Bay is right behind the Orioles for the division. Yeah. Tampa Bay is one game back. So those games matter to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is not going to be dicking around. We're 10 games up on the Jays, so it doesn't really matter. Like, they can win the division. They're going to be playing hard. It's not going to be cruise control. I don't know what people are seeing that makes them think, thank God the other teams play each other. The Jays are going to cruise against 74 and 73 Boston and New York. And then cruise against 91 and 57 Tampa.
I'm so ready for them to play great against Tampa Bay and lose every game to Boston and New York. Or for them to just lose every game.
So that's my part on that.
They just seem dead. Like, they just seem dead. Like, there's nothing going on right now. They started the game today.
It's officially.
The game started tonight with a two-run home run from Vlad. And then...
That was it?
Cratered.
Man. A season like no other.
Truly.
I really don't know
if I've ever seen anything like it.
Makes me like the team less.
Yeah. Yes. There was a good... I was talking to our friend Chris Lund tonight, and he was saying how, going up with, they're so bad. And I sort of made the argument we just made that the frustrating thing is, like, they could make a run at any time. But then his response, which was 100% correct, was, how about they make me like baseball less then? And that's what it is. Everyone's talking about the booing and the lack of, it's because they're no fucking fun to watch. And they haven't been all year. Like, they're just...
What are you going there to cheer for? Crazy.
Even sure, they could make a run, but, like, they're no fun. And we're going to watch every single one of these stupid games in the next 2 weeks, and it's going to be no fun. And it's just, that's how it's going to go.
Yeah, they found a way this year to win games in ways that people were like, it just so happened that like they would win a game and it would seem like they were seconds away from losing every time. So it wasn't even hype. You're just like, ugh, this is death for them to have narrowly edged this game out. I can't remember the last time they won and I was like clapping my hands.
The only fun win I can think of in the last 2 months is Reese McGuire fucking up for Boston. And that wasn't because of the Jays.
Right.
That was fun because Reese McGuire fucked up.
And that was an early David Schneider game.
That was an early David Schneider game, you're right.
Really bad. Okay, take a quick break. I want to talk something else I want to talk about on the other side. We'll put it on the Patreon, and then we'll answer questions after this. Alrighty, Jake, let's wrap this up with the mailbag. I will pull it up here. Fiery episode. Lots that got into. Went into some extra stuff on the Patreon only. 20 minutes. Pretty good, I think. A little more Manoa. A little more things that... a little more baseless, I think. Not baseless. A little more speculative.
Yeah. You know. All bad. All bad.
That's important. Not good. So it's time to read out some mailbag questions. Start off with James G. If you could go back and nix one deal from the offseason, which would it be? Teoscar for Swanson, the Varsho trade, the acquisition of KK for Belt. What are you reaching for here?
I mean, KK and Belt were fine. Good moves. They've been exactly
hard to argue with those ones, yeah.
Yeah, they've been exactly what you want them to be, and more in Kiermaier's case. The Varsho one, I feel like bothers me more, and it's not really Varsho's fault. It's just that like they could have gotten so much more for Moreno last year, it feels like. The move itself, is like neither Moreno or Lourdes have been particularly outstanding, so it's not like, other than vibes, I'm not sure how much they're really missing out on there. The Teoscar one,
but yeah,
the Teoscar one, I get it. I only, you know, we haven't been a fan of it the whole time, but that one's the timing of that one will never make sense to me. Making that move,
so I'll say,
that quick will never, yeah. I'll never, before even gauging the market at all, I'll never get that.
So we've had a full season now to look at how this all turns out and what went down and what was good and what was bad. And for me, having the hindsight, it's the Teoscar for Swanson, and it's not particularly close.
Teoscar's last couple months have been amazing as well.
Varsho was an excellent defensive outfielder. Getting Varsho and Kiermaier and having that be your outfield is a big W. And if you're occasionally swapping in Teoscar, which allows you to rest the very broken George Springer a little bit, and you're also bringing in Belt. And listen, I know enough people have shown me this, so don't bother making this the thing that you say back to this in the show when you're listening to yourself, that you go, okay, but the trading the Teoscar is opening up the money so that you can go and get KK and Belt, and you can make the move for Varsho so you can take on the extra money. I get that. I get that the argument isn't necessarily let's compare Teoscar and Swanson directly. But I would say this question is asking me to take back just one deal, which is to say other ones theoretically all still happen here. And Swanson was very good this year. He was great at some points. But what we are learning right now and what we learned throughout this year sometimes is the extra reliever is not that important when you don't score any fucking runs. Right? When you're constantly relying on the extra reliever because you are constantly in tight games and you are not blowing anybody out and you're not scoring quick runs and nobody can hit and you don't have that guy who is a little bit make or break and gets on fucking heaters and is the kind of guy that propels you to have 10 game winning streaks because he hits everything for 2 weeks. They didn't have that guy. Nobody did that this year, really. Whit Merrifield, I guess, did that this year. Guys had good, big stretches, Nobody had a Teoscar stretch this year where it was like, this dude cannot stop hitting home runs. This is fucking freaky. This dude has hit 5 home runs in his last 12 at-bats or some shit like that. Nobody did that this year, and it showed. There was just nobody. And as great as Swanson was, he missed the last month and then hasn't had to come up when they were losing by 10 to Texas. It hasn't really mattered to have Swanson, so... it would be Teo for Swanson for me, as well, of course, as well as a guy that you can enjoy watching, a guy that's fun, a guy that cranks homers. I think Teoscar Hernandez is sort of the answer to so much. He obviously hasn't faced the heart grow and he struggled mightily for huge chunks of this year. And you want to point to specific things here and there. I'm sure you could make the argument they're better off without him. But I'm also allowed to then do my theoretical. And I just think a lot of the small problems, you'd be like, ah, Teoscar around for that would have been nice.
Yeah,
I guess Matt Chapman at the beginning of the year had a little mini run. But other than that, man, no one's really done it.
As you said early at the beginning of the show, the fucking outfield play, they played Whit Merrifield instead of Dalton Varsho tonight anyway, and it cost them on outfield defense.
Right.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah,
good point.
I think everything you said, I agree with. And I'd also say that I think the Teoscar deal is really, if you wanted to break down the problem with the year into a nutshell, I think you can point to that trade. Both vibes-wise, offensive-wise, philosophy-wise, like it was such a clear reaction move to last year.
It's hard not to look at it like they were traumatized by blowing the lead.
And yeah,
like, needs to be what we do.
It happened so fast. It happened before you could even gauge the market. Like, they probably could have got Swanson for Nathan Lucas, by the way the market shook out. And,
yeah,
it just, it to me, it really just kind of tells you all you need to know.
It certainly seems like they got absolutely traumatized by that 8-1 blown lead and were like, we're doing anything we can to go into run prevention. And
can't blow a lead if you don't have a lead.
Great, as long as you're preventing runs the whole time.
You know what? They're not going to be
now
fair.
That it's,
they're not going to blow a lead in the wild card game this year. Because they won't be fucking playing.
They didn't have the lead at any point against the Rangers for 3 full outs, I read.
Okay, this guy outscored 35-9.
Michael Smith asked us, missing the playoffs be better for this team long term than making it and getting crushed by Seattle or Tampa? If changes need to be made, would it be better to not give the front office an excuse like the playoffs to gloss over that need? What do you think? Is it better for them long term to miss the playoffs?
Yeah, I think I said this on the Patreon segment. So spoiler alert: there is no doubt in my mind that if they make the playoffs, no changes will be made. There'll be roster changes, obviously, but if they make the playoffs at all, I guarantee you Schneider and Atkins don't go anywhere. 100%, it's better for the team long term if they miss the playoffs. Barring a miracle run, which, like, fucking don't hold your breath.
The Atkins thing again is like, man, you got to know who the next guy is if you're getting rid of Ross Atkins.
James Click is right there.
He hasn't done that.
Click is right there. He's in the office already.
You have to know, but guess what? The Red Sox GM got fired today. The Red Sox job is officially available, right?
Yeah, fair point.
Don't get beat by they got to fire Ross tomorrow, if that's the move then, right? You have to fire Ross season ends and know that Glick has taken your job. It's tight, man. It's tight. You have to know he want to take it. I'm sure he would, but boy, the Red Sox job is right there. Unlimited budget. Do whatever you want. Young players. Oh, boy. Anyway, the thing is, big roster changes are coming one way or the other, no matter what. You have the Manoah piece.
For sure.
That... you're going to be forced to do something here.
And also, like, next year is the last year of the window, 100%. No ifs, ands, or buts. Next year, the window is over. It might already be over, but next year it is.
Chapman's out. Yeah, for sure. Chapman's out. Springer's a year older. Kiermaier is out.
Ryu is out.
Belt is out. Ryu is out. So it's easy. Again, it's easy to go bring those guys back, but are those guys signing up to come back with this core? And signing up to be like, well...
Right.
Hicks, go back to that disappointing team. Kiermaier, after the year Kiermaier had, he can go anywhere next year.
Absolutely. And he could sign a $15 million deal, easy.
We'll overpay Kevin Kiermaier.
He got paid $9 million this year.
Didn't have to do this year.
He got paid $9 million this year. He's going to walk into $16 million next year. Plus defense, center fielder.
I mean, they're going to go baby mode. Yeah, they're going to go baby mode a little bit. You're going to have, I think, Schneider probably on the team next year. I think Horwitz probably on the team next year. And then probably maybe
Relvis gets a shot. Relvis gets a shot. Barger gets a shot.
Yeah. So I think I think that's going to be a thing. You continue the catcher conversation. And yeah, a hole in the rotation that you're like, hypothetically, you're putting Manoah in there if he wants to come back to the team next year and pitch. We don't even know. So it's going to be moves that way anyway. If bigger moves you're talking about Schneider, if you're talking about front office, I still do lean that, like, if they get in, say they get into the wild card and get thumped by Tampa in two, I think changes happen anyway. I think maybe not Schneider, but I think you see some coaching staff shakeup. I think you see some shakeup because something is busted somewhere in the player communication pipeline. Because if the problems are, you know, that somewhere along the line the Manoah relationship got fractured, even if it is partly his camp, if it's partly this camp, we don't know. But that relationship was allowed to get fractured. And if the Vladdy problem is Vladdy isn't listening to anybody, that's a communication problem too. So your communicators are your issue here then, and you didn't hire good communicators.
Oh, I definitely think the Martinez's and the non-Schneider coaches, I think, are getting changed regardless.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, and the reason I advocate that I think Schneider might be on the list to go as well is the selling point was like, this guy knows these guys. He knows these guys, right? He knows this whole team. He came up with all these guys in the system. They're all, and that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is like, these guys have been hearing from this dude for like 8 years in a row. And they're fucking.
He's crazy. Also now giving the same quotes. He's giving the same quotes now that Charlie got fired for, basically. The lack of urgency.
They've heard everything this guy has to say.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
So, yeah, it's bad. Jeez. This is how sickening 2023 is. We're dangerously close to like Charlie was right as a
really strong talking
point. I think really. You may have said it earlier. You said
the best team of this window is under Charlie. So,
catcher in the rye just with a photo of Alex Anthopoulos. Wish there was a way to know you're in the good old days before you actually left them. I think we knew in 2015 we were in the good old days.
Yeah,
to be honest with you.
Also. Making the playoffs, I know the narrative is popular this week that the Braves have made the playoffs like every season he's been there. Making the playoffs every season in that division is not that big. Like, he's done a great job. I'm not saying that, but like, he's in the AL East or the NL East. Sorry.
The stat is that goes, but the stat goes back to 2015, Jake. 2015.
That's true.
We made the playoffs.
That's
2016.
True. I'm not. He's done a great job. He's done an amazing job.
It's the Dodgers and Braves. Yeah.
He's done an amazing job.
Dodgers and Braves, no question. But
no question, he's done a great job. People, but also, like,
I can tell you,
calm the fuck down.
I can tell you that I can tell we're nearing not rock bottom, but things are going poorly because there's a lot of like questions. People don't want to talk about baseball in these questions. That's a funny one.
Yeah.
Mark Pesci asks, "Am I wrong or does Jake look like Gurdeep from CHFI Radio?" But bugging me for weeks. In the screenshot he provided, this is the most somebody that is not your ethnicity has ever looked like you. I would say.
I'm going to say not really. That's a much more handsome man than I am.
Well, he's on
of the two photos TV that are sent radio. To us. In our
I don't even know.
In the two photos sent to us here, one of this Gurdeep guy and the right above is Alex Anthopoulos. I look closer to Alex Anthopoulos, I would say. Not a good thing.
I see the hair. Self-esteem.
Also, hi, Pesci.
Alex Anthopoulos looks like Blake in that photo.
He does look like Blake in that photo.
Old pal BK asked, what's your best guess at Davis Schneider's 2024 OPS plus? Let's see here. Let me pull up. That's one of those things. I'm so bad at guessing what an OPS plus will be off the top of my head. I know you're famously very good at it. but I will tell you. one of your skills is guessing what OPS plus will be. We remember quite well. Currently it's 237. Brandon Belt's on the year is 133. Danny Jansen a 115. Kevin Kiermaier 112. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. 112. George Springer a 107. Kevin Biggio a 103. whose numbers do you think is that? Where do you, knowing that's sort of your roundabout way, what do you think?
Well, he was OPSing around 800 in the minors. 823
right.
last year through three leagues. He OPS 969 in Buffalo this year. Which you know, crazy. Wouldn't
I think
really wouldn't yeah. surprise me if people figure him out and he be prepared to be disappointed, I think is what I would say. He's clearly like a good hitter. Like he knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm going to say next year, I'm going to say 109.
Not bad. 109. You said a useful ball player.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think
he's not the cornerstone of your franchise.
Yeah. I don't think he's going to be like bad by any means, but certainly not expecting.
109 this year is like a 750 OPS.
Yeah. That seems right.
So, yeah. Given the numbers that you gave out and the leap, it's probably not going to be 1258, but we'll see. I think that sounds about right to me as well. 750, 768. He could push. He could push generational talent numbers. He could be 770. That's not crazy. Where Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is right now, OPS plus of 110.
Yeah, I could see. Yeah, it's pretty close. 109, 110. I could see that.
The best prospect anybody's ever seen. Yeah, it makes sense.
Also, sorry, I'm just noticing this is trending. Please stop advocating for Don Mattingly to take over the manager job. He's bad at it. Also,
doesn't matter.
You'll hate it so much. Anyway, moving on.
I mean, how much worse? Yeah, not like the happy-lucky guys they are right now. with hindsight, go back and redo the past offseason. How would you have built the team differently at all? We would have found a way to get Robbie Grossman on the team. I'll tell you that much.
Fourth outfielder for
certainly
sure.
Certainly didn't ruin the week. Not having Robbie Grossman certainly didn't.
Got on base 11 times this week.
Come back to bite them.
11 times.
The very worst possible time. Fucking great. Fucking great. We would have got Robbie Grossman. That's the first one for you. We would have got Robbie Grossman and, I don't know, probably not gotten and then dumped Paul DeJong at the deadline. Would have been a big one for me.
Right before Bo got hurt. Yeah, that's a good one.
And we said before, I would have either kept Teoscar or certainly not traded him the morning of the offseason starting. I would have at least waited at least the winter meetings and talk to a second team. Jesus. Peter Shepherd. I hate to see this. Well, I hate to see it. I'll get your temperature. Dangerously close to believing Kevin Biggio again. Fool me seven times, shame on me. Fool me eight or more times, shame on him, right?
Absolutely not. Good for him for picking
league it up. Average hitter, lefty bat. Yeah.
Look, he's used, as we've said this all pretty year, Kevin's a useful guy if he's the end of your bench. When he's first off your bench, that's where the problem lies.
Well, he almost proved those last little bit that to be useful, he sort of has to play more than you want him to.
Mm, true.
Right? That's sort of the angel devil with Kevin Biggio. It's like for him to be useful, he sort of has to play a lot in a short span. Otherwise, he's just staring at strikes and he's like, shit, this plate discipline isn't getting me anywhere. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. Do I believe that he could be a useful player on a team? I do. I don't know that it's the situation that we currently find ourselves in. I think a full season of Kevin Biggio next year is probably a problem, to your point. Black Home Terry with a heights-related question. How much do we need to be paid to walk all the way across the stairs/platform at the highest point of the dome roof? We've all looked up and seen the stairs up there. What would you need to be paid to walk across
there? As long as I'm strapped in, I'll do it for free.
No problem. You're not afraid of heights.
Not really. If I'm strapped in and I know I can't die, sounds fun. Still pay me, because just like pay me for anything. But
labor, yeah.
But yeah, I do it for free. It looks fun. It's like the skywalk.
Would do it if offered. If someone walked by and was like, hey, Jake, you want to walk across that?
So strap me the fuck in and let's go. Looks fun.
For some reason, those scenarios, it's always like, for example, the hang over the side of the CN Tower walk thing.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
For me in those situations, it's like, it's not that I'm afraid of heights. It's that I don't trust the mechanics. Like, I don't trust the mechanics.
Yeah, I
don't trust the staircase. I don't trust the dude who works at the CN Tower. Like, that's what I don't trust.
That's fair.
It's not like, I'm afraid to be up high. It's like, I'm afraid that this guy who is stoned didn't do my harness.
Yeah. No, I think.
Or this harness that holds people all day.
Never trust yeah, people.
Anyway.
But, yeah.
Or things, apparently. I would do it for $500 as my number. Okay, let's get into some a little more off-topic stuff. Because that was a lot of on-topic stuff. What's your go-to toppings for soup? Cheese, crackers, hot sauce, fried egg, nothing. It depends on the soup, of course. I think of crackers classically because I'm a sort of a hearty soup. It's sort of what my brain defaults to. I sort of think of chicken noodle as default or one of those. I love cheese on a soup I'm putting cheese on is good news. Fried egg soup as well is also good news. What do you think is your go-to soup topping?
I'm not really a soup topping guy. Unless it's like a ramen sure. and you're putting an egg in there. Crispy onions. Oh, yeah. Cassie yelled crispy onions, which is a topping for literally anything, which is fair.
Cassie, you're so smart.
She is very smart.
So smart.
Yeah, I'm not really a soup topping guy. I also, it's soup dependent, you know? Like, you get a black bean soup, you want to toss a little sour cream on there. Like, that's fine. But, yeah, I'm not really a soup topping guy. Soups are what they
hard
are.
Hard to not say crackers.
Yeah, I guess okay. oyster crackers, if we're talking that kind of thing, then yeah. Some oyster crackers and some hot fish milk. Plans? Let's fucking go.
You big New Year's plans this weekend?
New Year's? 5784. Oh, shit, is it Rosh Hashanah?
5784.
Oh, buddy. Going to a non-Jewish wedding on Saturday.
Send that to all my chosen friends. I don't know what their New Year's plans are.
Didn't even occur to me it was this weekend.
Feels like it was just 5782. It's crazy. that's why they... Yeah, anyway. Paul Adam, maybe a controversial one before we go here. What are the most overrated and underrated meats?
That's a good one. Overrated.
The most overrated ham, meat is the chicken always. Breast.
No, I disagree. I love a chicken breast.
Ham.
Ham. Ham's fucking boring.
To me, chicken breast is, in reality, so limited in what it can taste like.
You can sauce that any way you want.
That's a sauce. You're talking about sauce. You can put sauce on anything.
Yeah, but it doesn't always.
Chicken breast, to me. The boneless chicken breast has become the most ubiquitous meat in our society. It's everyone's number one, like, it's the most commonly eaten meat. And chicken thighs are better, I guess is what I would say.
Of course they're better. There's more fat.
Right, which is why I'm saying chicken breasts are overrated because there's better exact things you can get for cheaper. The boneless, to be specific, the boneless, skinless chicken breast is the most overrated meat.
That's fair. I disagree, but it's fair. Yeah, I'm going overrated ham, just like deli ham. Boring, 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 boring. Don't care for it.
Yeah,
okay. Underrated meat?
Because when you say ham, my instinct is the spiral cut. Like holiday ham.
That's oh no, like that's. Wet, I mean, I'm also wet. Also not a huge fan of it, to be honest.
Oh, that's one of my. That might be my. Might be my pick for underrated meat, but it's also hard. It's like nobody underrates pastrami, right?
Right.
Nobody's like, oh, pastrami isn't that good.
You know what? You know what? Though, on a similar token, corned beef super underrated. Corned beef better than pastrami
for sure. Yeah, no argument there. Underrated meat, yeah, tough. I was almost gonna say chicken thighs there. It'd be like chicken thighs should be what chicken boneless, skinless chicken breasts are, but it's hard. This is very hard, Jake.
Prosciutto.
I think it might.
I'm a big prosciutto guy.
Prosciutto. Yeah, like prosciutto.
Gabagool is great.
Like a finger meat.
Yeah,
like meat you want to
for sure, 100%. Yeah.
Good corned beef. Although I don't know anybody's underrating it.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But it doesn't get the love that the others get.
But man, I think about it. It's like, man, corned beef hash is so good. So maybe it is corned beef.
I'm sticking with corned beef, yeah.
Corned beef, we did it. We agreed on something. I like that for us.
Look at us.
That's the podcast. Get ready for a winter of agreeing about corned beef. Because...
Oh, buddy, we're going to talk so much corned beef this off season.
Yeah, can't wait. Corned beef soups, you name it. Absolute flip out type shit. That's it for the week. Did a lengthy one, but
how could it not be?
I guess we'll make plans officially to talk. Well, we should see where they are after the Rays series, I guess, and then either put a stake in the ground.
There's only two weeks left.
Double back.
We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. We'll talk to you this Sunday after this whole fucking thing is over. That's what I'm saying right now.
Okay. If some dire things happen, as I did this weekend, we'll jump on the Patreon.
What else could happen?
But we'll speak to you again. Yeah. They could go on a run. They could have not lost. We'd rush to get on here and make before they fucking blow it to get one positive thing in before the season ends. Good. Okay, that's it. We'll talk to you later on. Hope they win, but also kind of hope they don't because, you know, sometimes it's like, all right, I'll just watch TV, I guess. Taskmaster.
Taskmaster's on.
March. New season coming. Okay, that's enough. That is it. We'll talk to you again later. Thank you so much for being a part of Less Than Jake.